like us to look at Psalm 39. I'm using the ESV translation just to focus our thoughts on this passage. And what amazed me as I looked at it was the fact that here are five requests that the writer of the psalm makes. Now, many people, when faced with suffering, think they cannot question God. This psalm gives you permission to make requests to God. And I think it's incredible when we look at what the psalmist is actually asking about God, about suffering. Right. So, that's the title of this sermon. Five requests that God invites during a time of suffering. And I don't think there's any of us who in the past, in the present, and in the future are not going to be faced with suffering. The Psalms are a part of the Bible that we all turn to, both in times of joy and in times of sorrow. To get the benefit of the Psalms, I think it's important that we understand how they're structured so that we can understand what is the psalmist trying to say. The first thing I think is important is that Hebrew poetry is not like English poetry or like narrative sections in the Bible or like the epistles. We are used to building up an argument from one point gradually and reaching the climax right at the end. In Hebrew poetry, the psalmist works his way down, and usually a key point is in the middle. And then he works his way backwards again to his original starting point. Second thing, Hebrew poetry doesn't have rhyme to it, but it creates a rhythm by repetition. The psalmist repeats certain words, certain phrases, certain sentences, either with slight variation or by saying the opposite to what he has said to help us understand what he is trying to get across. And the third thing that the psalmist uses is some vivid pictures to try and bring out what it is that he's trying to get across. This psalm is about distress. And you can think of it like a hamburger. The meat is in the middle. Above and below is a piece of cheese, and then two buns on top and the bottom. In this psalm, he's going to look at the issue of the brevity of life. He's secondly going to grapple with the issue of divine discipline. And ultimately, he's going to come to a conclusion about, is there hope in the midst of suffering? Let's look at the five requests. Verse 4, make me know my end. Verse 8, deliver me from all my transgressions. Verse 10, remove your stroke from me. Verse 12, hear my prayer. Verse 13, look away from me. And from that, he takes us back to verse 7, for what do I wait? That is the ultimate question that faces us in life. What is its purpose and what is going to happen to us? And is there hope? My approach is going to be to identify David's two strategies in dealing with the stress. Secondly, to explore each of these five requests. Thirdly, to try and discover from the words what is the purpose behind the request. And after each request, there's a reflection that he makes that helps us to understand what he is trying to say. And out of that, we will find the answer to the ultimate question. In the first three verses, David expresses his distress. And he tries two strategies to deal with his stress. Let's look at verse 1. I said, I will guard my ways, that I may not sin with my tongue. I will guard my mouth with a muzzle, so long as the wicked are in my presence. He uses this graphic image of a muzzle. It's as if he wants to take a muzzle that you would put on a dog and put it over his mouth to stop him from saying anything. He does not want to speak out, to complain, particularly because he's aware of the wicked who will bring dishonor to God in what he says. Strategy one is silence. Verses 2 and 3 show what the result is. I was mute and silent. I held my peace to no avail. My distress grew worse. My heart became hot within me. As I mused, the fire burned. Here we see that his first strategy of just keeping quiet was totally ineffective. Worse than that, his distress is actually increased. And so he changes his strategy and he decides to speak. Not to speak out to his friends, his family, or just anybody. He speaks to God in prayer. We know that because immediately he begins addressing God with his first request. Let's look then at David's first request, and you'll see it comes in the section that deals with the brevity of life. Make me know my end. And what is the measure of my days? Let me know how fleeting I am. Now, this question, make me know my end. He's not asking for God to shorten his life. He's not even asking, really, how long has he got? If you look in that second line, he's saying, and what is the measure of my days? It's almost like he's a scientist who's examining something. He wants to weigh it up. He wants to examine what's going on so that he can fully understand it. And he wants to discover what is the purpose of life. And then he reflects on the brevity of life. I would suggest that behind this first request is the request for understanding. He seeks the meaning of life and its purpose, and he wants to understand and get in perspective how brief and life really is. Let's look at his reflection. How does he make sense of this? And we see that in verses 5 and 6. He reverses those two points. Firstly, he looks at life. And you'll see immediately that it's about the brevity of life. It's a handbreadth. It's nothing. It's a mere breath. It's a shadow. All of those are graphic images of how short and insubstantial life is. And then he turns to another very vivid image, which we can all identify with. Here is the person who's struggling in life to make an income, who wants to acquire wealth, and who's not realizing that none of us can take it with us. And who will get it afterwards, we don't even know. The futility of toil for possessions and for wealth. So once again, the brevity and futility in life. Let's turn to request number 2. Deliver me from all my transgressions. We see this comes in the section on divine discipline. Deliver me from all my transgressions. Do not make me the scorn of the fool. Now, it's fairly obvious that the reason he is making this request is that he's seeking forgiveness. But I would like to suggest that there is more to this than just the payment of a debt. I think he, in coming into the presence of God, he becomes acutely aware of his unworthiness. And I think he's thinking of more than just the sum of all his sins, because he asks God to deliver him. He's aware that those sins are merely the manifestation of his own sinful nature. And what he wants is more. Just think of the thief, person convicted for theft or for embezzling money, who's convicted, who goes to prison, serves his sentence, and at the end, he walks free. He's paid his debt. But the stigma will stay. He has a criminal record which will never disappear. And the psalmist's concern is that he wants to be delivered. He wants to be free from the scorn of the fool. The Bible uses a number of words for fool. On the one side, the simpleton, the person who knows no better, got no insight into life. To the other extreme, the arrogant, proud, opinionated, clever person who is in a total rebellion against God. It's interesting that David uses the word Nabal in Hebrew for fool. This is the ultimate fool. I hope it reminds you of that wonderful story in 1 Samuel 25 when David encounters a man by the name of Nabal. I suggest you read about it because it epitomizes this type of fool. I believe that David is wanting the record to be destroyed. that there's no record of his sin anymore. But I think even more than that, I think he's wanting a change in himself, a transformation of himself. From being dominated by sin, transformed by God into his image, and freed from the terrible consequences of sin. Let's look at his reflection in verse 9. He doesn't cry out in anger. There's no denial of his sin. There's no excuses. There's no arguing. There's no angry response. There's no spin. There's no trying to get away from it. So we see David's initial response is submission. Secondly, he has no doubt that God is fully in control of everything that happens. Some people are uncomfortable about God being sovereign and being in full control of everything. I would suggest that a God who is not in control is not God. David is in no doubt about where his suffering is coming from. Perhaps he's feeling like Paul in Romans 7 said, "Wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death?" So the second conclusion that David presents here is of the sovereignty of God in the midst of the suffering that we face. His third request, remove your stroke from me. I am spent by the hostility of your hand. Here we see David expressing the intensity and the severity of his suffering. It's like a marathon, a runner at the end of an ultra marathon. His body is aching, his legs are giving way beneath him. He has absolutely no strength. We see David here in the midst of a severe and persisting stroke that God is inflicting on him, is overwhelmed by his suffering. And he cries out for relief. Let's look at his reflection. And here again, he brings us a very, very interesting picture to explain his thinking. It says, when you discipline a man with rebukes for sin, you consume him like a moth. You consume like a moth what is dear to him. Surely all mankind is a mere breath. Think of what we read in Psalm and in Proverbs chapter 3, verse 11. My son, do not despise the Lord's discipline, or be weary of his reproof, for the Lord reproves him whom he loves, as a father the son in whom he delights. David is acutely aware that God's discipline of him is not vengeful. It's not out of any desire to to just inflict him with pain for no reason. It is in the context of relationship. Proverbs reminds us that God's discipline is because he loves us. There's purpose in what God allows in our lives. Let's turn to the second line and this image of the moth. What's he trying to get at? Now, perhaps it will help us to contrast the moth with the mosquito. Now, I'm sure you've all had this experience. You're tired. You go to bed, you switch off the light, and then you hear bzzz. Well, you're not going to get any sleep unless you switch on the light, grab the fly swatter, and do battle with that mosquito. Because otherwise, he's going to get you. The moth is not like that. You don't see the moth. In fact, the moth's sole purpose is to mate, lay eggs, and then die. That's all it does. You don't see it. He doesn't make a noise. But several weeks later, when you take out that dress you had spent so much money on, or that expensive suit, it's full of holes. What is it that's dear to us? And what is the moth? I'd like to suggest that what's dear to us is our youth, our appearance, our strength, and our health. And the moth is time. Ultimately, we will all get frail, sick, and die. The brevity of life again. Let's turn to request number 4. Hear my prayer. This mirrors what he was saying in the beginning when he asked God to listen to him. Hear my prayer, O Lord, and give ear to my cry. Hold not your peace at my tears. This is obviously a cry for mercy. He wants God to listen. More than that, he wants God to answer. He wants to feel that God is understanding his distress. Why mercy? If we look at the next line, he tells us, "For I am a sojourner with you and a guest like all my fathers." David is not saying that he has some intrinsic right to God, that God should listen to him and give him what he wants. He's saying, no. I'm here on a temporary permit. I'm an illegal alien. I don't belong here. I have no rights in this country. Or I'm a guest. I'm not part of the family. I deserve nothing. And therefore, what he wants is mercy. Request 5. Look away from me. David is not asking that God stops paying attention to him or that he turns his back on him. What he's asking is that God will soften his judgment. So that his relationship with God can be restored and that he can smile. So once again, relationship. that he's interested in. And the joy of a restored relationship. We see in the very next line, he acknowledges that his life is coming to an end. But he wants, before his life ends, he wants to be sure of his relationship with God. So often in my work with dying cancer patients, I come across people who say they've made peace with God, or peace with their Maker. And when one probes a little further, you soon find out they have no relationship with Him. It's a mere hope that maybe God will let them off. David is not like that. David has a relationship with God, and he wants to be sure that that relationship is going to see him through this suffering. He wants forgiveness, and he wants peace. Death is inevitable, but what he needs is a restored relationship. Let's review those five requests. Make me to know my end was a request for understanding. Deliver me from all my transgressions was a request for forgiveness. Remove your stroke from me was a request for relief. Hear my prayer, the request for mercy. Look away from me, the request for joy. As we've seen in each one of those, it's about relationship. And now we turn to the ultimate question. For what do I wait? And it is the ultimate question in life. David looks back. What was life all about? Now that I'm coming to the end, what was it all about? What was the purpose of life? Secondly, he looks for what is going to happen next. What is the prospect in the future? And he gives it to us. My hope is in you. That is the only hope when we're facing suffering and death. It's relationship. So the focus of this psalm is verse 7. And now, O Lord, for what do I wait? My hope is in you. So the answer to our present suffering and inevitable death is found in our relationship with God. It's a hope based on forgiveness by a holy but gracious God. It's a hope based on God's character and not our merit. It's a hope based on God's promise and not our feeble efforts. A hope that provides purpose during our present suffering and certainty beyond death. My hope is in you. How do we apply this psalm to our own lives and to the lives of those that we come into contact with who are suffering? Of the 150 psalms, 64 of them are like Psalm 39. They're a cry for help. And I believe that a prayerful meditation on them will lead to a better understanding of who God is and a deeper relationship with Him. And I hope in unpacking it, I've given you some tools that you'll be able to use as you try and understand some of the Psalms. And then I think we have a week ahead of us, and I'm sure we can use the thoughts from the Psalm 39 in bringing comfort to those who are facing suffering and distress. Thank you.